Hello, and welcome to Anime's Journey to the West. I'm Coley Hoyt, and here are my friends as we cover the last two episodes of Romeo X Juliet.
Hello, my name is Zeb Berryman. My pronouns are he and him as we cover the last two episodes of Romeo X Juliet.
Hi, my name is Lydia Lewis. My pronouns are they, them, as we cover the last two episodes of Romeo and Juliet.
Hi, I'm Liz. My pronouns are she, her, as we cover the last two episodes of Romeo X Juliet. And no matter what, I'll always be the bodacious badass, no matter what we review.
Hell yeah. So as we cover the last two episodes of Romeo X Juliet, anyone been watching or reading anything interesting?
I've been playing Chris Tales. It just came out the other day. I pre-ordered it. It's a fun 2D classic inspired by JRPGs where you can control time as a really cool mechanic for fighting and stuff.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I remember playing the demo and I recall it doing the like thing where you have to make a choice between two options actually be somewhat more of like a thing where you would have an actual dilemma because both of the things you're trying to do are good, but you can only help out one person.
Yes. Instead of the typical, do you want to be a kind person or do you want to be a fucking asshole?
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and like me being me, I'm like, I need to be nice, even though I want to, like, I constantly yell at people in TV and movies to, like, just spit in their face. Fuck this. I've noticed that. Nobody spits in people's faces enough in movies and shit. Like, no, don't be a good person. This person is a monster. Spit in their face. Don't spit in people's faces in real life, because that's technically assault in most states, and also COVID.
Yeah. So I've been a bit busy, so I haven't really been keeping up with a lot of the, anime and manga stuff, though, I do have the pre-download done for The Great Ace Attorney, but, the actual game itself doesn't come out until the 26th.
Nice.
I'm so excited to play that. I just finished playing the first Phoenix Wright game, and I'm really excited for the prequel of with his great-great-grandpa and Victorian era with Herlock Sholmes.
Yeah.
I have a game I want to get, but I don't have money. So I'm trying to find something I can sell or some way to get $25 so that I can get The Outer Worlds while it's on sale.
Oh!
Because it is on sale on Switch right now for $24, but I also need tax.
Well, I guess I've been playing more Halo. Because I have Xbox Live Game Pass, and thanks to Xbox Gold, I have both Injustice games, and I've been playing those.
Nice.
Oh.
So, we've all been doing a lot more gaming than anime.
Yeah, what I found hilarious is how fucking broken Hal Jordan's throw is. I fucking, you know, like, I breezed through his chapter by just throwing everyone while I actually had to be good at fighting games for Batman's and Aquaman's chapter.
Nice.
Oh, Hal Jordan's a broken character anyway. He gets everything handed to him. Nobody actually likes him.
Well, lots of people like his ass. It has a similar reputation to Nightwing's ass.
I know, but he himself is an ass. He's so fucking boring. Guy Gardner is right there, and nobody cares about him and his amazing character development, okay? He's changed so much, and he has a beautiful love story with Ice. I love their relationship. And nobody cares but me. DC won't accept my letters. DC, I have a magic series for you. It could be for your black DC Black Label mature audiences. I already have the first issue that's going to cause controversy, make everybody hate me on Twitter. And then the second issue, everybody's going to even be more pissed off when they find out it's a fake out. Like, let it happen.
I like that your advertisement is everybody's going to hate this.
first two issues, and the people who actually read it are gonna like it. Like most controversies on Twitter, it's like, oh, this isn't controversial. You just didn't like what happened in a story in a fictional setting.
Yeah, I'd be okay if Hal Jordan just retired.
Can his buddy? What was his best friend's name? Happy? Can he take over? His little power. It's a literal superpower. He brings out the best in people. Literally, that is his superpower.
I can't remember.
I want that superpower. God, that would be the most useful thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm going to start on these, our final two episodes of the show.
The final two.
Yeah.
I never thought this day would come. There's points in times like this isn't going to happen. It's not going to... It's going to be all for nothing. And I'm like, oh my God, it's happening.
Yeah. Romeo x Juliet episode 23 is called Seed Brought to Life, The Kiss of Death. So Juliet has Conrad bring her sword. Romeo kneels to her and restores her throne to her. He says that she is now the true princess of Neo Verona, as she always was. We had that discussion about whether she could technically be like have Disney princess hair, or if being dethroned made it just be her own normal hair. And I guess that's answered now.
So the answer is princess hair?
Yeah, it was always princess hair the whole time.
Nice.
Can I just say I'm a little jealous of her birthmark tattoo that just magically appeared. That is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool looking. I can see why she wouldn't like it in the circumstances that she's in, though.
Like, my birthmark? I have, like, a birthmark, like, embarrassingly high up on the back of my left thigh, and it's just, like, a weird scattering of freckles that don't look like anything. Meanwhile, she gets, like, a flower thing on her clavicle that glows. I'm just saying that's pretty unfair in classist society.
He then announces that he must return to his village to heal the land, but he will leave his heart with her. She turns and leaves, thinking her farewell, as Conrad tells the others to hoist the Capulet flag high. So, as the Capulet flag flies high, one of the commoners
If the Capulet flag flies high, you know where they are, right?
Where?
Neath the standard of the iris.
Ah, yes. You know what? One more time. One, two, three. Neath the standard of the iris! Neath the standard of the iris! Neath the standard of the iris! Neath the standard of the iris!
Nice.
That was terrible. We were all so out of sync.
We were. It was great. I love it.
To be fair, we're not seeing any of our faces, so I think we have a little leeway.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, like, this is a pretty great episode, though it's very much a setup episode.
Yeah. We'll probably talk about the two episodes as a group rather than as just one thing.
It's for the best, just because they're so interconnected. It's, like, kind of hard to talk about one without the other. So, yeah. If that changes up the format to the point you don't like it, I'm sorry. Skip all our final episodes, I think.
We've done this before on some episodes, I think.
Yeah, we've jumped back and forth between talking about them together and talking about them separately.
Yeah, it really depends on how interconnected they are and how different the mood is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the commoners mentions that this is what the winds of justice have brought them. And I'm pretty sure that the mother and daughter Juliet saved in episode one can be seen celebrating together.
I think so too. And I love the fact they're using snow as confetti.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People throw the snow into the air and Jelen really celebrate.
I'm also like, is it supposed to snow here?
Everybody was kind of surprised when the snow fell the other time, but nobody was like, what is this? So it's out of season snow, I think, but not like, I mean, given that they're in an island in the sky, if they weren't used to snow, they would have just been like, what the fuck is this? Because there's no other places in the world to them.
I'm just going to say this. The fact that this turned into like a weird prequel to Laputa in the Sky kind of took me aback. Because I think a lot of us thought like, oh, it's floating. Like the floating city of Verona. It was like, oh, floating on water. It's kind of, you know, it's just be like, you know, Renaissance, Neo-Florence, all that. No, it's literally fucking floating. And it's like, what?
I thought that it was established in the first episode. It was floating in the sky.
It was, but like when I first heard floating, it took me a second. Like I was like, oh, it's like, oh, it's like floating on water. Cool, cool, cool. Because of all the, you know, aqueducts and water. Cool. I'm like, oh no, they mean like the fact. It just, this turned into like a weird prequel to what happened to the castle in the sky, Laputan castle in the sky. That's how this series ended.
Yeah. So Cordelia thinks of how Juliet can now have the joy she wished for her. We see Tubal and the guards looking into the distance. William and Amelia both celebrate. She thinks that if Juliet can get what she wants, she might get what she wants. Well, William quietly says, in all men's lives, there's a history. You took up arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing them, you defeated them. Dear Juliet. So, immediately after all this really happy stuff happens, Ophelia's eyes open, and she says, behold the goddess's lips. Over us a silence, it slips. The stained unborn will mew for pap in vain. The fate that doth deny them shall remain. We see that her hair and eye on one side have turned to wood. Juliet collapses, clutching her heart, while Romeo thinks, exalt this fallen place, my sweet, and I'll heal the wasteland. We will reunite when they do. Juliet realizes she is being summoned by Aeschylus, and we get a cool split screen of them both walking on, determination in their eyes, but for different reasons. We see the ground shake while Portia prays, and Lady Hermione, remember her, looks out over the city, and both Regan and the workers look up in shock. Down below, Romeo prays that Prince Montague's death will grant him peace, and promises to never raise his sword up again. He will raise his sword up again.
He absolutely will, and it'll be amazing.
Tyvol enters. Death makes no conquest this conqueror, for now he lives in infamy. Romeo remembers the last name his father said before dying. Tybalt confirms it was his mother and says, the devil was the spiked Silius wrapped around her heart. He asks how Romeo can leave Juliet so easily. Romeo says that it wounds his heart, but that Juliet is bringing back House Capulet and bringing a new Neo-Verona, and it will be harder if she's in the shadow of the tyrant's son. I'll just say here that political marriages to end conflicts were not that uncommon in the time period this show is based on. It would not actually be that weird for the two of them to get married in this circumstance.
It would be very normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems kind of, he's also, Romeo's just like, yeah, I need to get out. I need to go back to my village that I'm like, dude. What? You told them that you're going to go help save their families and the city from the evil dude. Like, don't you think maybe, just maybe, that they understand if you're gone for a couple days?
So, is there a reason why Romeo also can't be like, hey, y'all want to come back to Neo Verona? Well, my dad's dead. My GF is in charge of the city.
I mean, he has a reason for thinking that they need to heal the land. Like, without crops, people will die.
Yeah.
It'd be good to at least give those people an option, because I bet some of them were like, I don't want to farm.
I mean, it never comes to that, because he never actually leaves the city.
Yeah.
Anyway, he expands that if the land perishes, so do the people. He notes that Tybalt is his older brother and his girlfriend's cousin, and asks him to find Petruchio's brother and sister, the little diamond things, and let them ride his dragon sea steed. An enraged Tybalt knocks the stones from his hands. Wasting your care on strangers. Devil take him. A heart trembles, forgotten in your hand. For the people. For Neo Verona. For the damn soil. Gods, is there no cause you won't champion in the name of shunning her who loves you above all else? He asks what Romeo knows of Aeschylus, and explains that the daughters of House Capulet always merge with the tree, and this has been done every generation. So that also gives me a question, which is, has there never been a generation where they didn't have daughters?
Tybalt looks like he's a good couple years older than Romeo, like maybe in his 20s. You didn't think any of the people raising him knew this shit? We're like, listen, you gotta like pop out like a couple kids for us.
Oh yeah, I guess he is from that family line, isn't he?
Right, like he could like, it just seems like Aeschylus should be like, listen, I understand you need your sacrifice, but accept one, and if you kill them all, you're gonna have nobody for decades.
I mean, the actual answer probably is that his mom... Oh, that actually brings up other questions even more, because clearly it's not all of the daughters of House Capulet, because his mom looked like she was a full adult in the flashbacks, and she didn't get merged with Bree.
I wonder if they're like, the kindest thing to do is like find the oldest woman that is a Capulet and be like, listen, you're gonna die in like, I don't know, like an old dying grandma.
Yeah, I mean, there are no Capulets left at this point, but yeah. I mean, maybe it's just the direct line, like no cousins or whatever. I don't know. Like, maybe she was just a cousin of House Capulet and not like the main line, I guess, because otherwise, yeah, this kind of doesn't make sense. But also, the other question I have is, how has this not been noticed? That, like, the daughters of House Capulet always just mysteriously disappear by the time that they're, like, around 17?
You can always just say they died of illness. I mean, it's kind of implied that, like, unless, like, oh, the doctor did everything he could, but she was always a sickly child. A weak constitution.
So he tells Romeo that she will join the tree and live an eternity of torment in Aeschylus's stead. The ground shakes as Romeo realizes what's happening. Conrad tells the others to ignore the earthquakes and focus on the coronation. A minor Fire Emblem character arrives to tell them that he can't find Juliet. Kirio and Francisco go to help search. So soft music plays as Juliet goes to feed herself to the tree. Romeo collapses and Tybalt tells him it's up to him. Romeo asks if there's another way for Neo Verona to be saved, and Tybalt admits he doesn't know, but Juliet will die willingly if he doesn't save her. Juliet remembers the old man's words. The roof nearly collapses, and he swears Juliet will not perish. Kirio and Francisco reflect that if their dearest wish was Juliet's happiness, why'd she look like the hangman was taking measure of her neck? Kirio admits that if she was abandoning the city for life with Romeo, he'd be happy for her, and Francisco agrees.
I do have to say, I appreciate those two.
Yeah.
Francisco and Kirio.
Yeah.
I like them. I want more of them.
Well, you're not going to get much more, I'm afraid.
I know.
Yeah. Time's running short.
Yeah. So Tybalt and Romeo are separated, and Romeo catches up to a tired Juliet. She tells him that this doesn't concern him. He reminds her of their vow, but she says it was a pledge of a child. He says he doesn't agree, and if peace can only take root in the soil made wet within your blood, then let it wither unnourished. Neo Verona is destined for the cankerworm, but you are not. She tells him, my destiny was set at birth, championing this world, protecting the innocent people of Neo Verona. My task was preordained. She tells him that if he insists on stopping her, she'll run him through. She draws her sword, was clearly on the edge of tears. He nods and says, how could I let you accept Torment Eterno? What if it's a mortal sin, denying the fates their play? Then to heaven I will send thee and besmirch only myself with the villainy. For my beloved, to hell I'd gladly go. He draws his sword. Their blades touch, and they struggle with them in a shot echoing when they fought when she was the Red Whirlwind. The area collapses as they slash at each other. She thinks she can hear his heart every time their blades crash, and he beseeches the heavens to spare her pain. We get a flashback of all their time together as she thinks, Romeo, because I love you so dearly, I will go to the tree alone. Because I love you so dearly, I broke our vow. I breathed no word of you to you of Aeschylus, because I feared my courage would fail me if you knew. How could I have taken even a single step? My darling, I don't want to die. A simple life with you would be paradise. He knocks her sword aside. He kisses her, and she embraces him. Everything starts to collapse because the kiss was just that good. The search party sees what's happening and flies down. Conrad assumes this is a kidnapping, but before anything, and Juliet corrects him, but before anything else can be done, some not terribly well-integrated CGI roots rise, chasing the dragon seed away and separating the two lovers. Ophelia, in a much more aggressive voice than normal, announces, hark! O Capulet flower! Here is the moment, here is the hour! Submit you now to the Covenant's power! The mark just destroys part of Juliet's armor. She screams as she grows wings, and I don't understand how this was a part of this anime that I forgot. She reaches her hand to Romeo, but then flies away under Ophelia's power as both Romeo and Conrad call her name.
It's really good. I love this scene, actually. Like, it's very visually interesting.
Yeah. So Tybalt arrives, giving Romeo his sword and telling him that his love is in need of a hero. He takes him across the bridge. Ophelia announces, she folds back her wings, perchance to sleep, and judgment trembles beneath the sand. The goddess's cheeks are moistened as tears fall from mine eye. So, though the chosen one will take your own ruddy hair and wipe them dry. She has said this before, but the tone is like entirely different and more aggressive. Romeo runs in to take down Ophelia, but she does the cool anime villain move where she doesn't even look at him as a root knocks him down. So Ophelia floats up to Juliet and is way hornier than she's ever been before, saying, "A winged mating. Oh, how you please my eye." She then forces a kiss on Juliet. "Have a kiss before you die. The seed within you has come awake. Now to oblivion, for Aeschylus's sake." Romeo looks up, unable to do anything.
I'm not gonna lie, I thought when she kissed Juliet, there was gonna, like, she was gonna pull back and there would have been some, like, gross, like, seeds or, like, flower shit coming out of the Ophelia's mouth.
Yeah.
I'm also not going to lie. Look, I am very gay. Part of me wanted this scene to end with, like, "I'm sorry about all that flower shit, I'm just very gay."
I'm also curious because they do mention, like, there was another tree and it died, and now for mortal sins they have to more or less sacrifice the Capulet daughters to the tree every so often. I'm wondering, the old man that talked to Romeo about that, maybe he was the priest from that tree that died, and now he's just a weird old guy roaming around. Like, he's still immortal. I think Ophelia's a little weird because she doesn't have something to balance.
Yeah, she's weird because she doesn't have anything to balance, and she almost never talks to anyone.
Except for Papa Montague, who is just an asshole.
Yeah.
And not that saint himself, yeah, I'm not surprised she's, you know, she's a bit insane in the membrane.
Yeah.
Contempt.
Yeah, contempt. Anyway, so...
Oh, come on, it's Cypress Hill.
I'm very curious. I think I missed it earlier, but like when Tybalt was like asking Romeo, like, "Well, what do you know about Aeschylus?" He's like, "Oh, our father took it to us once." Just the line delivery on that was, I'm like, what the fuck was that line delivery?
I mean, that's kind of just the way Romeo is a lot of the time too, though.
He's just like, "Yeah, hey. Hi, this is great. It's great.
So the final episode preview is delivered once again by William. "A final word, a smile before they part, infused with all the blessings one can send. So face to face and truly heart to heart, a tale of fearless love is brought to end. Romeo and Juliet say, in life and in death." The episode preview is interesting too, because up until the end of it, there's almost no actual images from the final episode. It's mostly just various shots we've had throughout the show of, like, architecture and stuff. It's interesting because it's an episode preview that really does just tell you what's going to happen in the episode. Like, if there was, like, a question if they were going to live or die, the episode preview pretty much answers it, and that is actually kind of in the Shakespearean tradition.
Yeah, like, you know what you're getting into, which I think it's very interesting that, like, a lot of media does more or less advertise it and explicitly state what it is. Are you saying that Shakespeare was the original tagger?
Kind of was.
Did Shakespeare was the first one to tag his fix?
I mean, I think that telling the ending of the story was a fairly common literary device at that time.
I mean, Shakespeare, at the beginning of Romeo and Juliet, did say, "Yeah, these two fucking teenagers are gonna get murked."
Yep, that was mostly what I was referring to. Though it's also kind of in, like, an anime tradition too, because nowadays we're used to, like, the episode previews only telling us a certain amount or not even telling us all that much. But I've watched, like, old Gundam, and, like, Like, they will actually name their episodes things like Rio Dies.
Poochie went back to his planet, episode 360-something.
Yeah, like, they have an episode called Rio Dies, and in all of their episode previews where somebody dies, they just tell you that they're going to die. It's really weird.
Really is.
Yeah, so we are now in Romeo and Juliet, the final... Oh, go ahead, Lydia.
So I think that before we get going, this is a good time for a very, very brief break. And we're back.
So we are in Romeo x Juliet, the final act. Prayer, in the same world as you. As the area collapses, Francisco says he doesn't think there's any way in where they are, and they'll need to find a new path. Conrad wonders what terrible fate has befallen Juliet. Tybalt tells him to shut up and go back to Neo Verona and calm the people. He says, "And I doubt it is within your power, or the power of any of us, to save this world. The best we can do is put ourselves to use where we can, and leave our hopes and fate to Romeo and Juliet." Curio tells Conrad to look after the city and to leave Juliet to him and Francisco. So Romeo asks Ophelia what she's done with Juliet. "I have given her kiss of death, Aeschylus's covenant it doth imbue. She never again shall draw weakened breath. Now away with you." Romeo obviously refuses to give up Juliet. The ground shakes, and more roots die. Romeo leaps forward, and a root destroys his cape. Up above, there is panic in the streets. We see William and Amelia. William says, "Let it stop. If the world is destroyed, who would have any use for a story?" Entire mountains collapse, and parts of the land fall to the sky. Ophelia offers Juliet to Aeschylus. Her hands are fully wooden now. Goddess is in breath of the land. Winds paired upon her back, the source of all life. Poor washed and unport sea. Now to join Aeschylus deep beneath the sand. Go now, embrace your kin. The seed becomes a sapling to absorb the sin. Romeo begs her to wake up, but she is absorbed by the tree. The earth continues to crumble. The Fire Emblem minor characters are dragging Conrad from the palace as he is distraught that after everything they've sacrificed, it's still falling apart. We see Tubal look up in horror. The roots are fully out. Cordelia, Antonio, Benvolio, and his family huddle together. The tree now has a giant glowing cocoon. Romeo asks Juliet what's gone wrong. She says that the young sapling wavers. Romeo argues that maybe Juliet is fighting what she's becoming. Ophelia does not understand why she would. Romeo says it's wrong, and Juliet should not be made to pay the price, this price alone. Ophelia says that Juliet is not alone. She joins the daughters of both Capulet and Aeschylus, a compact that has gone on for centuries, without which Neo Verona would fall. Romeo says if that's how it has to be, then so be it, but asks to be with her. Ophelia's eyes widen in rage, and she flies over to him as her boss music plays. "Such foolishness. You refuse to see the truth." He tells her she's the one who is blind. "Seeds of doubt, I cast thee from mine eye." She is interrupted by an arrow from Francisco as the cavalry arrives. Tybalt frees Romeo, and as he almost falls, Kirio saves him. I'm not going to go blow by blow here, but there's a very cool battle sequence where they fight Ophelia, and Romeo climbs a tree. And as we go to commercials,
it's for really fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. So as we go to commercials, the eye catch shows both crests and is in black and white. It's really cool. Right. Oh, and I do want to note that I'm pretty sure that the music here doesn't show up in any other part of the series.
I mean, the boss battle does need its own tune.
Yeah.
And it's really good music. Like,
yeah.
I feel like there's been some solid music throughout the series. Like, it just knows when and what to use.
Yeah, the series has very good music in general, but this is, I think, the only instance we've had of a unique song for only one scene.
Mm.
I am also going to say that this scene did make me think of the final battle in Fire Emblem, the Sacred Stones, to keep with that.
There is a very JRPG feel to this final battle. Yeah. So Romeo struggles to Juliet. The others continue to fight Ophelia. Eventually, Tybalt looks like he's about to get to her, but she pulls another cool anime villain move, and his knife is stopped by the air itself. She says, "None who would defy the will of Aeschylus may tread upon this holy place. The unclean are denied his holy grace." Meanwhile, Romeo comes to Juliet, who's glowing now, and begs her to wake up. Ophelia, having beaten the others, flies upward. Romeo reaches for Juliet, but a root wraps around his throat from Ophelia. He continues to struggle forward. There is a shaking, and Ophelia seems actually perturbed and orders him to get away from her. He continues forward, calling her name, and Juliet awakens as Ophelia cries out in pain. So the cocoon explodes, and beautiful flower petals surround the two of them as they smile at each other. He says, "You're free now. You're not at the mercy of destiny any longer. You don't have to bear the burden. Rest easy, my love." Everyone looks up at the petals as soft piano music plays. But then Ophelia returns, now entirely made of wood. "Our veins still carry their hopes. Why do you resist when this world survives solely by its favor? Aeschylus is unique and precious. Without its roots, the world falls to decay. It cannot be permitted wither away." Romeo takes up his sword. "The most precious thing that exists in the world, things that exist in this world are us, the people who struggle to live our lives here." She calls him a wretch and lunges forward, as he does the same, piercing her with his sword. She makes a final cry and as she shatters. There's almost like kind of a Sailor Moon quality to her death, I think.
Yes, that very like self-sacrificing yourself for the ones you love. That Sailor, okay, if anybody's read Sailor Moon or watched the anime recently, there's a lot of fucking suicide in Sailor Moon.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I'm also talking very specifically, less about the self-sacrifice and more about just like the way that especially like minor villains tend to die in the show, like Monsters of the Week, where like the moon energy hits them and there's like a scream and they kind of come apart. Anyways, the tree shakes and the world continues to come apart. Juliet awakens once more, wings still at her back, and sees Romeo is pierced by a tree branch. She runs to his side. He looks up at her and strokes her face. "Thank you. It's because of you I was able to feel love. For the first time, I'm grateful, Juliet, to have lived in the same world as you." They see each other's names, and he says, "I won't ever say your name again. It's getting hard to see you, my love. Juliet." It's getting hard for some of us in the audience to see, too, but for different reasons.
Jesus, yeah.
He falls at her side. So, the world continues to collapse as Tybalt, Kirio, and Francisco look on sadly. Tybalt tells her that they have to go. She asks Romeo to call her name one more time. Tybalt says he tried to bear your burdens as best he could. He learned that you bore the name of his father's sworn enemy, yet he loved you still. She says, for all our life and until death, together shall we go, henceforth, to the end of eternity. Romeo upheld his vows to the very end. Therefore, so will I. Kirio says they must leave, but she smiles sadly and says, I can't. I'm sorry. A world that harbors such love within it should never perish. That's why I'm here. I'm sorry. I cannot save us all. Tybalt points out Aeschylus has been destroyed. She says it still lives, and that her wings are proof, and says of the seed, I can feel its pulse within me, but it's fading quickly. She smiles. Goodbye. Kirio moves to stop her, but Francisco holds him back and shakes his head softly. Her wings extend as You Raise Me Up plays. She takes Romeo's hand and brings it up to her face. I love you, Romeo. We will be together forever. The others go beneath the clouds. Oh, and then become sparks of light. We see many people evacuating on dragon steeds, and says, such a warm warmth in this light. Mercury is it too. Eventually leads us to the old man who breathes. The wings slow the descent until the credits begin, as we are at least a year later. William's voiceover says, Not one amongst us knew that Aeschylus had been holding the world aloft. He is sitting by the grass next to a table where he seems to be having a tea party. We had not even understood the nature of the sky we were floating across. The Lady Cordelia, with a somewhat more normal-looking hair, looks up at a tree holding a rose with some irises. My Lord Romeo, have you found happiness with your Lady Juliet? I shall find happiness as well, someday without fail. Francisco looks over the city from a balcony before being called to the assembly by Viterio, who is once again mayor. We see Ariel in the background as he travels to them. Cordelia and Benvolio, carrying a new baby, greet Kirio, who is now a shopkeeper. He asks if it's okay for her to be up already, when she says he's fine, he asks her not to push herself. We see he keeps a combination of roses and irises in his shop. At Juliet's grave, Conrad, wearing nicer clothes but looking even older, says, Dearest Juliet, I hope you can forgive me for all that I have done to you. He looks like he's on the edge of tears. An older Antonio tells him Juliet wouldn't want him to see him look so sad. He agrees and smiles. Tybalt gives Petruchio's siblings a ride on a dragon steed, smiling warmly.
It's not just any dragon steed.
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
He confirms it's Cielo and says he belonged to my little brother. We see Cielo's mate and some other dragon steeds below.
Yeah, be careful, Tybalt. Don't let those kids get too close to a baby dragon steed. They're just the right size for the for a baby dragon steed to unhinge its jaw and eat some children.
Damn it.
Yeah, so Dr. Lancelot's wife in the country says the breeze feels lovely. William thinks strife, hatred, sorrow, pain. What is it that brings these things to final end? 'Tis ultimately love that wins the day. For love indeed does old wounds warmly tend. And so, dear friends, with that, we close our play. Under a tree made of Aeschylus's roots, we see Romeo and Juliet's hands meet. So this is the show. So I'll say that I've, over the time that we've had this show, I've talked a lot about how my read on it has kind of changed over the years. Between the two times that we've seen it, as I've like developed a more critical mind and gone like a slightly more full view of the world. But I'll say that when I was a teenager, this made me cry, and it still made me cry when I'm almost 30.
This was a very sad, but very, you know, a mostly fulfilling ending for the most part.
Yeah.
I have some misgivings, but it's still a very well done ending.
Yeah, for sure.
I really like it. I think it does tie in well to the whole duality theme within the series. It's a motif that you saw throughout the series, and I like that they did it. But I think my big issue is because a lot of like the whole Aeschylus and the whole tree thing, a lot of it goes undirectly said. And you kind of have to guess and fill it in. And like, it kind of bugs me because I wish there was an episode after, because to suddenly be like a prosperous floating city in the sky to joining back down on Earth, like, imagine the political implications, the religious implications, the religious spiritual implications, knowing that more or less your God died.
I think we've got to say this. They don't worship the tree, they worship the goddess. The tree is meant to be a gift from the goddess. And the majority of the public didn't actually know the tree existed.
Okay.
But a lot of that wasn't clear in the series.
Yeah.
My main complaint is that I think Aeschylus needed a more build up, like, and maybe a bit more explanation, cause there were times where I was a bit confused, even with having rewatched the series.
Explanation, sure. I think that they've been building up Aeschylus since episode one.
Yeah, I just think I wish it was done more, or we got more in depth when they built it up. I'm very curious also, the old guy, like, oh, the mortal, like, show us the mortal sin. Romeo and Juliet don't have to know. Like, just have an episode for the characters.
I think that the mortal sin is Montague.
The murder of the Capulets.
Yeah.
Which requires the sacrifice of, like, the last female Capulet.
I mean, I think that the sacrifices have been going on since the beginning.
Yeah, the reason why Aeschylus is dying is because it's been deprived of those sacrifices. I would have also, again, my main complaint is not so much that I think they should have taken anything out. I want more of the series, like, I would have liked maybe an episode or two, again, one to allow a bit of more breathing room between Montague's death and the Aeschylus business, because, you know, an episode or two where, you know, they have to go, okay, so we've won. What now? maybe also, and there's also just some subplots I would have wished gotten better wrap up. Like Lydia has one that she wants to talk about. I liked the minor plot line, and I wanted to see that, you know, get bit more of a focus and wrap up, you know?
Yeah.
Again, the ending is still good, it's just that I fundamentally want more.
I think this was what we were going to get with a 24 episode anime.
I wish we had gotten more exploration of certain things with side characters.
Yeah.
A little more explanation of Aeschylus's whole deal.
I would have very much loved to have an episode a day, like, just to see more of the characters after them dealing with Romeo and Juliet and being dead. And also, you literally have a whole ass city, a whole country fall from the sky and join the earth again after being gone for so long. Can you guys imagine if, like, another country just fell from the sky?
That's true, but also it's not what this show is about. Yeah. Like, that's a whole new anime if we get to that point.
Yeah, that is a whole new anime, and, you know, it's not something that the series up to that point would be really concerned with.
Right. Yeah.
What would that series look like, though?
Oh, yeah, I would love to see that, don't get me wrong. It's like, if there is a Romeo x Juliet sequel, well, I wouldn't mind it being about what you're talking about, Elizabeth.
Yeah,
just a whole series about Neo Verona dealing with all that.
Yeah. I think the reason for the time skip of a year is that they know that they don't have time to deal with all of this, but they also have to establish that the city survived and that the majority of people got a happy ending.
Yeah. Also, I like the ambiguous note that it ends on, because when I say ambiguous, I'm talking about Romeo and Juliet at the, you know, shrine or altar.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, we don't know if they were resurrected somehow, or if, like, this is just their spirits looking over the city one last time.
It's one of those things that, even if they're still dead, it still basically gives them something resembling the happy ending they so much deserve.
Yeah, for sure. Like the interesting thing about this show is that though it still has their deaths, it recontextualizes it, and it's not really a tragedy anymore. Like, it's sad that they died, but they ended up making a sacrifice that ended up saving all of their loved ones and making the world a better place. That's not a tragedy. Like tragedy is about, like, a fall from grace, both on a kind of, like, a literal level where you're in a high position and then you lose it, but also often, like, on a very spiritual level, and it often ends up tearing through the rest of the cast of the play, where this person's tragic flaw ends up killing the people closest to them. Whereas this is, like, in a major way the opposite. The two of them don't really have that much of a tragic flaw, and what they end up doing ends up saving the world that they lived in.
Again, it is a sad ending, you know, at first with their death, but again, even if you interpret that, you know, this is their spirits looking over the city, it's still very, it still gives them the happy ending they deserve, because they're together in death, you know.
Yeah.
It's a very optimistic view.
Yeah.
Yes.
Other cool things. Another cool thing about the ending, like, we've talked back and forth about how the nobility is treated in this series. And I would have liked more of this, obviously, because I do agree with both Elizabeth and Coley. I would like more, but I also understand why there isn't more. But I would have liked more of this. But you do get kind of the implication that, like, the noble class aren't the only... It's not the House of Lords anymore. It's the, it's just the Assembly. And I don't think it was ever confirmed Francisco was a member of the nobility, so him being a politician is probably a good sign for the health of the society that the two of them ended up leaving behind.
Yeah, for sure. And I also like the fact that they just call him the mayor and not the Lord Mayor.
Yeah, also, and Ariel is there too, and this is the first time. And, like, the implication before was that the House of Lords was only for men. But if Ariel's there, that implies that it's not quite as patriarchal anymore as well.
Or other thing I found cool. The one scene where Romeo and Ophelia are fighting and they both strike at the same time.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the, 1980s Excalibur movie?
Oh.
Or at least the ending. Spoilers for Excalibur. There's a part where King Arthur gets stabbed with a spear and he like pulls himself across and like cuts down the man who stabbed him. Don't remember a lot of specific details about
that.
Yeah,
it was probably Mordred.
Yep, Mordred.
I really like the series. I think the way I experience the series is different than a lot of, like, the way we did, at least, because we watched we watched two episodes every week or so. So I think it did affect our opinion about the series a little bit, but I wish the pacing's a little odd. I have a question. Do you guys think if it had, like, an extra season or, like, half an extra season, would you think the pacing was better? Like, more time to get the other characters in, to get, like, more character arcs?
I don't even think, like, half a season was necessary. I just think another episode or two would have satisfied me.
Yeah, a thing that we should remember is that not all anime has the,
opportunity.
Well, yes, yeah. That's what I was saying. I was actually going to say, though, there are, like, a couple animes out there that have, like, 26 episodes or, like, 30 or something. And that probably would have given them the time frame.
This was an original series. I think it also, like, I think a lot of original anime, unless it's from a very popular creator or a very popular studio, I think they have a harder time to be longer because it's a new property versus, like, a popular manga or light novel or other existing property.
I mean, if I'm being honest, today this series would probably be 12 episodes long.
I was about to mention, 12-episode series are a lot more popular nowadays than they were back then. Like, usually if something would be 12 or 13 episodes, that's more of a sign of, you know, like, if it's a sort of 2010s, more of a sign of it being, like, an OVA series, where the average length for, like, a regular season of anime was about 24 to 26 episodes, if not longer, but usually original anime got, like, again, those 24 or 26 episodes.
Yeah.
Also, if this was made today, it probably would have been, like, a weird isekai anime, or even be one of those, like, oh, Juliet's from a different world, and now she has whatever, or Romeo, and it's something that doesn't add to the story, but it's a weird thing that's brought up on occasion.
I mean, there are occasionally just fantasy anime, still.
Yeah, there are still a fantasy anime.
Do you think if it was made today, the fantasy anime of Romeo and Juliet, if it was made today, do you think it would bring up the fact that two of Juliet's best friends were into her? And, like, play up, like, a love triangle? Or be like, hey, maybe a harem. Let's just tease it.
Maybe. We do have a couple of anime that are a bit more like that. Like, the this one is actually one of the few isekai that's, like, a thing that I think I would actually enjoy. I hear that one where it's the lady who gets sucked into her video game, gets reincarnated to her video game, and she's, like, supposed to be the villain, but she ends up just being, like, this lovable dork instead, and while she's trying to avoid all the plot lines that get her character killed, And she like accidentally, like she basically accidentally is such a charming idiot that both all of the dudes and all of the women end up falling in love with her.
Oh, I know you're talking about. Like, I got reincarnated as a villainess from an Otome game. Also, I get it. It's on purpose. At this point, the weirdly long specific titles. I know it's probably to make it easier to search for or whatever, but it's getting to the point the self-awareness cheekiness is starting to like fade away.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why it's done, I think, is because nobody reads the back covers.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the reasons why I was actually surprised when I found out that 86, which was one of my favorite animes from the last season, I was surprised when I found out that it was a light novel, because I was just like, oh, it must be an older light novel, because I can't imagine a light novel this year having just a simple title like 86. That is like probably tells you less about what's going on than like even like a light novel title from like a decade ago would.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I liked it overall. I have quibbles like all of you do. I wish that like some of the minor plots got a little bit more resolution. Like not even necessarily in the epilogue. I would have been fine with it if like some of those minor plots just happened a little bit more beforehand or had a little bit more development. Like I've always
the Benvolio Cordelia thing comes to mind.
I'm that too, but I'm always going to be a little bit mad that Curio has to be Benvolio's blunt dad did not end up being a thing that really stayed around for more than an episode.
Yeah.
I kind of wish we also had, like, I don't know, I feel like Lady Hermione and Mercutio, I felt like those two could have had a little bit more interaction, because, like, I feel like Lady Hermione had, like, a spoonful of Mercutio's, like, madness arc, because when she was, like, trying to confront Juliet, she went a little crazy, like Mercutio yeah. did. But unlike Mercutio, she didn't go down that path. I wish we had a little more interaction with them.
Well, the interesting thing is they had plenty of interaction before that arc happened, but then afterwards that didn't happen, which feels like a bit of a missed opportunity.
For right? sure.
Not even like a romantic arc, but like maybe just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Yeah. Like, I'll say that Mercutio just... Mercutio's last shot, just being staring at the sparks of light, uncomprehending, and then his fate after that being ambiguous, I actually do like.
I like that too.
Yeah, Mercutio's story arc was basically finished by that yeah. point, you know?
Yeah, it was finished, and I don't like incomplete arcs, but I do like leaving things with yeah, I do like leaving things with like hints of ambiguity.
Yeah,
which, like
this is great.
I don't yeah, like we don't need to know how like where Mercutio is, you know, he's
we did get some shots of him as the city was crumbling, but it wasn't definitive.
Yeah.
Right. And, I don't mind, you know, I actually prefer not being spoon-fed stuff just because, you know, I'm like, yeah. I understand media. I have a useless English degree. I know what's going on.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just for clarity's sake, and sometimes just like, I just need to be validated that I'm right, please.
Part of me also wishes that we got to see Saruman die.
So I'm going to have to disappear. Do we want to do this later, again tomorrow, anything else, or...
I think we're set. I think we just need Zeb to say the thing.
Yeah, so, this may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime most certainly is not. I'm Zeb Berrybin. This has been Anime's Journey to the West. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Anime's Journey TW, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not.